Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Bird Construction third quarter financial results conference call and webcast. We will begin with Teri McKibbon, President and Chief Executive Officer's presentation, which will be followed by a question-and-answer session. Analysts and institutional investors who wish to ask a question should have their webcast muted when dialing into the conference number provided. At any time during the presentation today, you may press the star and one on your telephone to be placed into the question queue. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. When we are ready for questions, you will be introduced into the conference in the order that you are received. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star, then two. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode and the webcast is being recorded. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. Before commencing with the conference call, the company reminds those present that certain statements which are made express management's expectations or estimates of future performance and thereby constitute forward-looking information. Forward-looking information is necessarily based on a number of estimates and assumptions that, while considered reasonable by management, are inherently subject to significant business, economic, and competitive uncertainties and contingencies. Management's formal comments and responses to any questions you might ask may include forward-looking information. Therefore, the company cautions today's participants that such forward-looking information involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors that may cause the actual financial results, performance, or achievements of the company to be materially different from the company's estimated future results, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by the forward-looking information. Forward-looking information does not guarantee future performance. The company expressly disclaims any intention or obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information, whether as a result of new information, events, or otherwise. In addition, our presentation today includes references to a number of financial measures which do not have standardized meanings under IFRS and may not be comparable with similar measures presented by other companies and are therefore considered non-GAAP measures. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Teri McKibbon, President and CEO of Bird Construction.
Thank you, Operator, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us on today's third quarter 2021 earnings conference call. Joining me today on the call is Wayne Gingrich, Chief Financial Officer. I'm pleased to once again report solid financial results for the third quarter of 2021. Over the past few years, we've made a concerted effort to grow the business profitably, all while balancing the overall risk profile of the company. A key element of this strategy was to increase collaboration internally, externally with third parties, and with our clients. To this end, we have secured a number of projects using a collaborative framework, such as integrated project delivery or alliance partnerships, which create an appropriate balance of risk between a contractor and a client. With our broadened service offering, I believe the strong foundation that we have created, combined with our collaborative approach, is bearing considerable fruit. This is evidenced by the record securements and change orders we booked in the quarter, as well as the record revenues, backlog, and pending backlog reported this quarter. This quarter also marks the first anniversary of the acquisition of Stuart Olson. We are extremely pleased with the integration, the new team that we now have at our disposal, and how the two teams have come together collaboratively to secure and execute projects. Furthermore, during the third quarter, we announced the acquisition of Dagmar Construction. With an 80-plus year history, Dagmar's work programs span structures, roadwork, rail, and servicing, and other specialty projects. Dagmar has an established track record of long and proven stable revenues, healthy margins, and profitability, which is a testament to the company's ability to manage costs and consistently deliver projects on budget. With Dagmar underpinning our infrastructure business, we expect a unified coast-to-coast infrastructure business with civil infrastructure capabilities to accelerate the next phase of the company's growth. Overall, I'm excited about Dagmar joining the Bird team, and in the span of 2 months, we have a number of exciting projects in our pipeline. Lastly, on September 9th, we held our first ever Investor Day, where we unveiled our new three-year strategic plan. Our strategic plan is rooted in three key pillars: team, perform, and diversify. As such, the plan focuses on the further development of Bird's team, strong project execution, and a geographic diversification of service offerings. We believe that the achievement of our strategic objectives in 3 years' time will position Bird as a leader across our industry with world-class safety, high employee engagement, and collaboration across our teams and divisions. If you haven't already done so, you can stream the Investor Day on our website under the Investor section. Turning to slide 6, the culmination of our efforts resulted in strong third quarter 2021 financial results. In fact, revenues for the third quarter were at an all-time high, up 80% year-over-year. Once again, the combined Bird, Stuart Olson entity yielded top-line synergies this quarter. Adjusted EBITDA increased 30%, and adjusted earnings were up 12%. Additionally, as I indicated previously, we reported record securements and change orders of $740 million in a quarter. This drove our backlog to a new high as at September 30th. As we look into the remainder of the year and into next year, our bid pipeline remains robust, giving us continued confidence in the near to medium term prospects for the company. As you can see on slide 7, we reported an adjusted EBITDA margin of 4.6% in the third quarter of 2021. And on a trailing 12-month basis, our adjusted EBITDA margin stood at 5.5%. Overall, Stuart Olson has been accretive since the date of acquisition. That said, as we have discussed on previous conference calls, the inclusion of Stuart Olson will weigh on our near-term margin profile. However, embedded within our three-year strategic plan is our pursuit to achieve a higher margin profile over time as we leverage our combined expertise with our clients from coast to coast, which will continue to present cross-selling opportunities as well as undertaking an increased level of self-perform work. Moving to slide 8, we announced that we negotiated a construction services contract with the international real estate firm Hines for a mixed-use project in the heart of Toronto. The project is a 17-story mixed-use building that will be constructed by leveraging green building practices with sustainable solutions. Additionally, we announced that the consortium Concert Bird Partners was awarded a design, build, finance, and maintain contract for 5 Alberta high schools with the Alberta government under a P3 model. The project has a total combined contract value in excess of $300 million and is part of Alberta's recovery plan to create jobs and diversify the economy. Additionally, we announced the number of high-profile awards subject to quarter-end that were added to pending backlog. Specifically, we were awarded the first phase of a progressive design build with early collaborative contract involvement for OPG's Clarington Corporate Campus project. The project is divided into 3 phases to reflect the design's progressive nature, ensure the cost estimate, schedule project forecast, and project planning are sufficiently advanced before construction. Construction is expected to begin in 2022, with completion in 2024. We also announced that we will participate in 3 integrated project delivery contracts, or IPD contracts, in Western Canada with a combined value in excess of $150 million. These contracts include a substantial food and beverage facility expansion project, the Okanagan Indian Band Water System Upgrade, and the North Okanagan Wastewater Recovery Project. Lastly, we entered into an alliance agreement with the renewable energy company Novena Energy Partners to jointly pursue opportunities for waste energy transfer projects across Canada, with Bird acting as the exclusive constructor. The current addressable market is estimated at over $500 million. The alliance relationship between Bird and Noventa commences with a successful financial close of the recently announced Toronto Western Hospital WET project that is valued at approximately $43 million. The words that were added to pending backlog embody the philosophy that we are pursuing as part of our new three-year strategic plan, which is to work collaboratively. Additionally, given our positioning in green building techniques such as mass timber and stack, I'm confident we will continue to win mandates where we're able to help our clients achieve their climate goals. These contract awards drove our backlog and pending backlog to an all-time high, as shown on slide 9. At the end of Q3, our backlog stood at $2.8 billion, while pending backlog amounted to $1.8 billion. Overall, I'm pleased with our financial and operational progress. With Stuart Olson having been part of the Bird team for a year now, we are extremely pleased with how accretive Stuart Olson has been to date. The combined Bird-Stuart Olson entity has continued to yield revenue synergies as evidenced by benefits from cross-selling the combined capabilities of Stuart Olson and Bird. Additionally, with Dagmar now part of the Bird team, we expect to deliver even greater value proposition to our clients. And from a macro perspective, as we continue to emerge from the pandemic, we continue to see opportunities surface with the sustained improvement in natural resource prices, which is notably improving the business prospects in Alberta, as well as the significant planned infrastructure spending announced by the federal and individual provincial governments. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Wayne to go over our financial results.
Thanks, Terry, and good morning, everyone. Please turn to slide 10. I'm pleased with our third quarter 2021 financial results. We reported record revenues, backlog, and pending backlog for the quarter. In the third quarter, we generated construction revenues of 621 million dollars, representing an 80% increase compared to the third quarter of 2020. The year-over-year increase can be largely attributed to the inclusion of Stuart Olson. Additionally, despite the recent fourth wave of the COVID-19 pandemic, the company observed increases in revenues across all of its work programs this quarter as the market continues to recover to pre-pandemic levels. Gross profit for the third quarter was 46 million dollars, or 7.5% of revenues. This compares to gross profit of 27 million dollars and a gross profit margin of 7.9% in Q3 2020. The year-over-year increase in gross profit can be primarily attributed to the inclusion of Stuart Olson, as well as the diversification of the company's work programs, particularly in the company's self-perform industrial projects. I would note that the company recorded a recovery of 2.5 million dollars of compensation expense in cost of construction for the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy, or CEWS program, in Q3 2020. No such recovery was recorded in the cost of construction this quarter. As Terry indicated, going forward, we will be facing challenging year-over-year margin comparisons. This is a result of qualifying for the CEWS program in the back half of 2020 and the first half of 2021, which positively impacted our margin percentages. Given we no longer expect to qualify for the CEWS program, all else equal, our margin percentages will decline in comparison to prior year comparable periods. General and administrative expenses for Q3 came in at 30 million dollars, or 4.8% of revenues. This was 12 million dollars higher than the 18 million, or 5.1% of revenues, reported in Q3 2020. Again, the primary reason for the year-over-year increase is related to the addition of Stuart Olson. Q3 2021 adjusted EBITDA amounted to 29 million dollars, or 4.6% of revenues. This compares to 22 million, or 6.4% of revenues, in Q3 2020. As Terry mentioned, the inclusion of Stuart Olson will weigh on our near-term margin profile. However, we are confident we are building a business that can support a higher margin profile over the medium to long term. Adjusted earnings was 14 million dollars, or 0.26 per share in the third quarter of 2021, compared to 12 million, or 0.29 per share in Q3 2020. Turning to our year-to-date results, construction revenues were 1.6 billion year-to-date 2021. This compares to 949 million for the first nine months of 2020. The 71% year-over-year increase can be largely attributed to the acquisition of Stuart Olson. I would highlight that revenues year-to-date 2021 were unfavorably impacted by approximately 116 million dollars due to the pandemic, noting that the entire impact was felt within the first two quarters of 2021. Gross profit year-to-date was 135 million dollars, representing a 109% increase compared to the comparable period in 2020, while G&A expenses increased 96% to 90 million dollars. Adjusted EBITDA year-to-date 2021 was 80 million dollars, representing a 4.9% margin. Adjusted EBITDA for the comparable period in 2020 was 42 million dollars, or 4.4% of revenues. Adjusted earnings year-to-date was 38 million dollars, or 0.71 per share. This compares to 20 million dollars, or 0.47 per share, for the first three quarters of 2020. Similar to what drove our Q3 results, the year-over-year improvement in our year-to-date 2021 results was driven by the combination of additional margin for the acquisition of Stuart Olson, which includes synergies, as well as progress with diversifying our work program and improving profitability margins in our operations. We have a strong and balanced work program in place across the country. Before moving on, as Terry pointed out, our backlog and pending backlog stood at an all-time high as of quarter end. I'd like to point out that our pending backlog includes over 900 million dollars of MSA contracts as at September 30th, 2021. These contracts are typically with industrial clients that span multiple years for MRO services. We expect to convert these MSAs to backlog on a quarterly basis as purchase orders are received. Overall, these MSA contracts represent a recurring revenue stream over the next one to five years, providing us excellent revenue and profit visibility. As always, we are diligently focused on appropriately balancing the risk profile of our backlog through end market diversification and contracting methods. I believe that the current composition of our backlog and pending backlog, for that matter, appropriately balances customer concentration, contract size, contracting method, and end market diversification. Moving to slide 11, I'd like to quickly touch on the progress we've made to date with the integration of Stuart Olson. Overall, we're on track with our previously stated objectives. This includes $10 million in annualized EBITDA synergies that we expect will be realized as we finish out the year. Additionally, we expect to realize further cost savings over the next couple of years as we integrate both companies into one unified IT platform. On September 1st, 2021, we acquired Dagmar Construction. As you can see on slide 12, the purchase price of the transaction was $32 million before working capital adjustments. The transaction was financed 80% with debt and the balance coming from Bird Treasury shares issued to the seven principal vendor shareholders. On slide 13, you can see Dagmar's clients and work programs are well diversified across work type, with no one sector making up more than 30% of overall revenues. In addition, the company boasts a well-respected and long-standing clientele list, including Canadian National Railway, Canadian Pacific Railway, Metrolinx, municipal and governmental bodies, in addition to others. Overall, Dagmar will allow us to increase our self-performed capabilities in the high-growth civil infrastructure sector and drive higher margins for the consolidated company. Furthermore, with Dagmar in the mix, we expect to continue to see cross-selling opportunities as emerge as we can leverage our broader service offerings. Moving to slide 14, we continue to retain a strong balance sheet, which provides significant financial flexibility. During the quarter and announced concurrent with the acquisition of Dagmar, we expanded our syndicated credit facility to $235 million from $200 million and retained a $50 million accordion feature. We further extended the term of the credit facility to September 1st, 2024. The expansion and extension of the credit facility speaks to the strength of the relationships we have with our lenders and their confidence in Bird and the strategic direction we're taking the company. Overall, as at quarter end, accessible cash was $75 million, a $72 million improvement from the end of Q2 2021, while adjusted net debt stands at $11 million. Our adjusted net debt to trailing 12-month adjusted EBITDA ratio is a very healthy 0.09 times at September 30th, 2021. All financial metrics are well within our comfort level at the end of the quarter. Turning to slide 15, we continue to balance our capital allocation priorities between organic opportunities, dividends, M&A, and debt repayments. In the first 9 months of 2021, we generated cash flow from operations before non-cash working capital of approximately $77 million. Our capital investment has remained modest in 2021 as we deployed $6 million toward CapEx year to date. As always, we remain committed to returning excess capital to shareholders via our monthly dividend payment. We paid cash dividends of $16 million year-to-date 2021. As it relates to our M&A strategy, as always, we will remain disciplined and opportunistic. And overall, I'm very pleased with our financial strength and our positioning within the Canadian construction industry, which will allow us to capitalize on anticipated strong economic growth, coupled with the backdrop of higher commodity prices. With that, I'll turn it back to Terry.
Turning to slide 16, I continue to believe that Bird has built a strong platform for future growth and strong profitability. We've made tremendous strides over the past few years as our employees have embraced change and built a solid and stable business, despite the challenges the pandemic has presented to date. This strong foundation has allowed us to capitalize on a robust pipeline as we're seeing cross-selling opportunities continue to emerge through the collaboration of Bird and Stuart Olson. While it is early days with the integration of Dagmar, we are excited about the growth prospects it provides in the civil infrastructure market, and to date, we are seeing opportunities evolving. Both acquisitions are acting as catalysts for Bird to grow and diversify, all while maintaining a balanced risk profile in our work program. As we embark on our new three-year strategic plan, which takes us to the end of 2024, we're focused on strengthening our team, delivering solid operational and financial performance, and continuing to diversify our business. I believe these priorities will set us up for success for years to come, which will ultimately allow us to build shareholder value over the longer term. With that, I would like to turn the call back to the operator for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Analysts who wish to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone to join the question queue. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you are using a speakerphone, please ensure you lift the handset before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. Our first question comes from Frederic Bastien of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi, Fred.
Morning.
I was wondering if you could add a bit more color on the opportunity that you see in Dagmar. Obviously, it seems like a pretty strategic move. Lots of opportunities in the Ontario transit market. So, is there any additional color you can provide here?
Well, certainly it has the 80 years of history, tremendous track record in safety and consistent performance. It's got a really exciting team that we're working with and getting to know a little better. And most importantly, it's a group of leaders that, obviously with Bird, feel a larger scale enables them to look at projects collaboratively with the Bird infrastructure teams and grow. And that at times takes us beyond even, the pure infrastructure side of the business where you might be doing a larger site development for a list of preferred clients that now get introduced to Bird as well with the balance of Bird services. So it's a very diversified group, and we're really excited, especially after the first couple of months, a number of really unique projects that we feel are very strategic that are in the pipeline.
Is their business, I would anticipate that their business is a bit more seasonal than the overall Bird company. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, to a certain extent, there's a bit more seasonality to it. And again, it depends on the mix of work. Obviously, if you're doing grading and that kind of thing, you can't really do much of that with frost. But, they'll do like deep underground type utilities and things like that that usually proceed. Some of the structure work that they do would proceed if you're into a schedule that requires that, and they're obviously very adept to working in Canada's winter conditions. So, but you're right, there is certainly it does come off a bit not dissimilar to some of the other areas of business that we have.
Well, last question for me. I mean, your margins held up quite nicely during COVID, and they're on an upward trend. Obviously factoring the Stuart Olson and acquisition and its own margin profile. But generally speaking, we've seen a nice upward trend. How many more levers can you pull to continue driving profitability higher?
Well, I think we're certainly excited about the growth of cloud of platforms, and I think in comparison to other forms of contracts where you're not in that framework, it gives you the consistency, but most importantly, what's most exciting about commercial platform like IPD or alliance contracts is you're working very, very closely with the client from day one, and you're breaking down any of this, the stakeholder issues and that can give you grief in terms of delays and permit approvals and utility relocations, things like that. So you're well into that long before you get to construction. So anytime a contractor can have that type of front end development before you hit the ground, it's pretty exciting. So we got a lot of that, and we're quite excited about that because it just gives you a much more consistent performance in your business. So I think the more of that platform we see evolve, and it's evolving at quite a clip right now, there's more levers there to obviously move the balance of the mix of work and the mix of backlog. It'll trend higher just because you've got a much different service offering that clients are prepared to pay more for. So.
Thanks, Terry. Well done.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Michael Tupholme of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Terry. First question just around the backlog. Obviously, a very strong record level. Just curious, what does the duration of the backlog look like, and has that changed at all relative to what the durations historically looked like for Bird?
I think the duration is similar. I think we've disclosed in the next 12 months about 62% of our backlog will be recognized in revenue, and you know, plus or minus, we've been in that 59 to 63% range. I think in recent quarters. The one piece that goes out longer is, of course, those MRO MSAs that we have, but those actually aren't recorded in our backlog. Those are in our pending backlog until we get those POs that allow us to do the work in the short term. So some of the longer term items are actually in pending backlog, not backlog.
Okay, that's helpful, Wayne. Thank you. And the next, I was going to ask you about pending backlog next. So that's also at a record level, I believe, very strong. How do we think about the conversion of that pending backlog into sort of firm or hard backlog?
Yeah. So what we've kind of been saying is that we've got out of the $1.8 billion that's there, we've got $900 million that's these MSAs for MRO contracts, and those typically span 1 to 5 years. So if you even just straight line that, you're just under $200 million a year, if you kind of think of it, that way in a simplistic view, I guess. And if you look at the other $900 million, typically those are projects that we would expect to convert into backlog in the next 12 months. And, again, typically, if we're looking at bringing in roughly 62% of projects of backlog into revenue in the next 12 months, probably a similar way to think about it in terms of that other $900 million. But those will convert. Like some of the ones in there are IPD projects, and you have to go through that validation phase before you can really finalize what the scope and the contractual price is going to be. So they do stay in pending backlog a little bit longer than some of the other contracting methods we have.
Okay, and what's the status of the nuclear project that's been in, or that was in pending backlog for a period of time?
Yeah, I think with that we're getting very close to finalizing the validation phase with the client, and we're pretty confident we'll see that convert in the near term.
Okay, and then just sort of shifting over to some of the commentary you'd made about expecting organic growth in 2022 on a year-over-year basis. I'm wondering if you can, if it's possible to elaborate a little bit on what your expectations are, how you see the year unfolding as far as any kind of progression in organic growth, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, we don't give specific guidance in terms of what our outlook is going to be in terms of revenue or profit, as you know. But Q3 was a very strong benchmark for us. And what we said is, that $116 million of pandemic impact, that really impacted the first 6 months of the year. So if you kind of take Q3 as that's really the first quarter with the combined, Stuart Olson and only 1 month of Dagmar Construction in there. But with the combination of Stuart Olson and Bird, without a lot of impact from the pandemic. So that can give you a good baseline for a starting point when you think about us growing organically next year.
Okay, thanks for that, Wayne. And then lastly, for me, can you help with how we should be thinking about changes in non-cash working capital in the fourth quarter, where that leaves you for the year, and then how we think about that for next year as well, please?
Yeah, I think the seasonality that you've seen in Bird is similar to what you're going to see this year. Like I think Q4 will still be a strong cash generation quarter for us. So you'll see non-cash working capital start to decline, particularly as you get into December. I'd say Q3, we had a really high proportion of self-perform work, and typically those types of contracts have longer payment terms as well. So what may be a little bit different this quarter is instead of all of that non-cash working capital converting to cash in Q4, you may see some of that slip into January, but I think Q4 will still be pretty strong from that perspective. And then, looking ahead to Q1, there won't be that much self-perform work performed in Q1 as it would be in the summer months, of course. So I think you'll see pretty low investment in working capital there.
Okay, so just on a full year basis for 2021, I get that you expect to see some some of that come back in the fourth quarter, but where does that leave you, do you think, for the year? Will you have invested, notwithstanding the reversals you're expecting in the year?
Yeah, I think we'll generate positive free cash flow for the year. I think year to date we're probably, have a negative $27, $28 million somewhere in there, but I think we'll generate positive free cash flow for the year.
Okay.
So we'll yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Maxim Sytchev of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Max.
Good morning.
Terry, maybe the first question, going back to Dagmar, do you mind maybe just providing a bit of color in terms of kind of a typical project that, you know, they can do, and then the hope in terms of where you can bring it in terms of size and obviously the risk profile kind of on a, you know, in a couple of years time frame with Bird's capability?
Well, certainly, with a company with that kind of history and in a market like Toronto, there really is a number of different sectors, they're evolving. If you think of the growth of light rail and heavy rail, that's an area that they have a very strong track record and, certainly a very close relationship with their larger clients for that type of work. And we're excited about that. We're excited about that growth. As you know, some of these projects are, certainly increasingly complex, where you're building rail, you're relocating rail, you're building, in some cases, rail stations to support that, of which Bird has a good resume. And then you've also got, in some cases, you're building mixed-use facilities on top of rail platforms. So, when you think about that type of a delivery, right down the fairway for us with all the different capabilities we have. You go into a broader array of business, whether it's growing, in commercial retail development, which are typically, have scale, some of the larger, warehouse type facilities, whether that's, the Amazons, those types of things, you offer the client a much broader array of delivery, of which, these types of clients have a very high expectation of and standards of being on time, so you give them that assurance with the self-performed capabilities. And then you start to get into some of the other areas that are growing in Canada, such as, things like, as we acquired Dagmar, they had a pretty impressive track record on larger data centers. And that's quite an interesting sector that's evolving for us because, when you think of Bird, and just to give you a data point on a company like Bird and as it evolves is we ran through 2021 and we certainly weren't running at peak levels. We employ, in order of magnitude of 2000 electricians. So you start to think about the capabilities and you grow and whether that's renewable power, whether that's data centers, whether that's, Canada's becoming a hub for Bitcoin mining, you get all these areas and all of these types of projects in an integrated fashion. And Dagmar brings that, that resume and those projects, which is quite exciting for us. So, I touched on a few. There's probably many more, but those are areas that I think are front burner in terms of exciting opportunities.
Right, and I guess just to kind of separate the available kind of spectrum of opportunities in terms of, like Dagmar would not be doing a loan sort of an LRT project. I mean, that's outside of their scope, but I guess in time,
correct.
The idea is to bring it up to that level, right?
Yeah, that type of thing would be in a collaborative delivery. We've looked at a couple. We're seeing some of those move now to a collaborative, sort of alliance model. And we've looked at a couple. Like Bird's expertise in that area is on the station side. Dagmar's expertise is grading and rail and in that integration, and that that's where their expertise. So it fits together quite nicely with us. So, and if you roll the clock back a couple of years, like we're building stations for Q at Vinci right now in Ottawa on the phase two of Confederation Line, and that we would have had a broader service offering to be part of that team with a company like Dagmar in the mix. But as well, there's more of those, you know, that are evolving. And what we like about the models changing on those to a certain extent. And so we've been invited on a few of those to date. We haven't engaged in one yet, but we, early days for us, and only having a couple months on the integration of Dagmar. So, but there's a mix of stuff evolving. There's rail and station work for Metrolinx that's evolving. You know, a number of projects with a collaborative type model that fit together quite well with our offering. And early days, but we're quite excited. And mostly, the team that we've inherited with this acquisition is really impressive. So.
Super helpful. And just my second question pertains to the better commodity backdrop on oil and I guess mining in general. I was wondering how you view this as an opportunity for your kind of legacy Stuart Olson businesses and some of the heavy civil
exposure. No, it's the bird business as well, because rising tide rises all boats in the oil side, and it strengthens the Alberta economy, and the bird, the bird civil and industrial business, opportunities are evolving because, stronger cash flow for those clients means more investment in sustaining capital on their projects. And, stronger oil price obviously is a catalyst for that. So we're seeing more opportunities. And we're also seeing the approach to ESG, which, anytime you've got something like the evolution of ESG for, companies that need to improve their overall, footprint, that's disruptive and creates opportunities for us because we have a fairly impressive service offering to present, whether that's a mass timber, facility, whether, you can look at a number of different areas, but mass timber, for example, is certainly accelerating in Canada with the number of opportunities, and that's right down the fairway for us with what we're up to.
Right. Okay. And anything on the mining side, Terry?
Yeah, mining. I think there's we're seeing opportunities start to evolve. It's still a little bit early. We've been pricing, budgetary interface with some of the larger guys. Currently, it's a little. I don't know, I'm finding it a little slower to evolve, and it may just be that they're being a bit more careful and focused on strengthening their balance sheets at this point after some tough years. But we're seeing, it's early days, but we're seeing some good signs there that there's growth opportunities and new mines getting, getting through the permitting phase and starting to engage with us. And, lots of news about BHP on the potash side. So that's another mega project for Canada. It's quite exciting. And we certainly have an impressive track record coming off of, our work to date at LNG.
Okay. Super helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from Ian Gillies of Stifel. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning, Ian.
With respect to the goal of doing more self-perform work to help drive margins, are you able to articulate how much of you think you can do organically, i.e. either by hiring people or just building out businesses yourself, and what you think may need to be done through acquisition?
Well, I think it's a mix. Like, obviously, an acquisition like Dagmar gives us, an acceleration of organic growth because you're buying a construction team and that resume and that experience. So that's certainly a catalyst to help us grow. I think, Bird as a company, was historically very focused on, work in Northern Alberta and in predominantly in oil and gas. And we've moved that, that focus to become, considerably more diversified in a number of different sectors. And in the same breath, on our vertical building side, we're focusing on an increased amount of self-perform in that group as well. And we're using the collaborative ability, from the industrial side, an infrastructure side to complement that. So, if you think of Bird as it moves forward, a very collaborative, organization. And I think, the geographic footprint that exists today is considerably larger than it was, you know, in terms of focal point, you know, a few years ago in that regard. And to a certain extent, we're following our clients. Our clients are, you know, obviously many of our clients have a national, you know, platform, and, you know, that continues to evolve. So, you know, a company like Dagmar can just having that resume and having the leadership team that, you know, has experience in some of these areas coupled with our existing teams, it just gives you a catalyst to add, you know, and focus on areas where we're interested in finding new organic, you know, opportunities.
Understood. And then the follow-on on the M&A side, you know, Stuart Olson looks to, by and large, be integrated at this point. Looks like it's been quite successful. You've also done a smaller acquisition in Dagmar. But as you move ahead, is there appetite to do another large acquisition yet, or do you still think you have a bit more wood to chop there on just on the integration side, just maybe even getting people settled and all that sort of stuff?
I think it really is. These acquisitions obviously are centered around timing, and sometimes the timing works for you and sometimes it doesn't. So I wouldn't say, Ian, that we have a, you know, focal point right now in terms of what's the next, you know, in terms of the scale of the next, you know, target, you know, whether it's small or large. We're, we will be opportunistic. We have, you know, a tremendous support from our board, and we like the mix of what we've got right now, and something evolves that looks interesting for us to take the next step, you know, in terms of diversification, you know, and could be a, you know, a nice catalyst for us, you know, we'll be there. So we've got a very experienced team, you know, in terms of, you know, evaluating, you know, M&A opportunities. We get a ton of stuff coming through our office to think about, and you know, so we're looking at those types of opportunities, but they have to be the right opportunity and the right timing and fit with what our strategic plan is.
Understood. That's helpful. Thanks very much. I'll turn the call back over.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Michael Tupholme of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking the follow-up. I just wanted to ask you about wage inflationary pressures, to what extent you're seeing those in the business and how you're managing through that.
So it's certainly something that is, you know, is out there. Typically, we have multi-year agreements with our trades, and the timing of those multi-year agreements are often, you know, not sequential. They overlap, you know, in that sense at different times and whatnot across the country. And we have a mixed labor force of unionized labor and, you know, non-union labor and clack labor. So we have a multitude of things. We have our own labor association, in fact, in one of our companies where we have 1,000 people go to work every day in their own association, which is similar to any of the other unions. So, and I'll say this, in the past 15 years, what I've found with the leaders of the larger unions is that at the end of the day, they're businessmen, and they enter into, you know, multi-year contracts with us, knowing that we have to be healthy and they have to be healthy. And I'll say this, in the last 15 years, they've always been, I would call them, you know, quite fair. So are we anticipating, you know, some pressure there? You know, potentially, but it's not going to be something that has a material impact on us, because there's that longer term view, and Bird's been in business for 100 years. And I think our union leaders, you know, today, it wasn't always that way, but in the last 15 years, in my experience, I've seen them take the higher ground as business leaders and realize that, you know, we're going to go through fluctuations and we're going to be fair. And as such, they have to be fair, and they have to think of us, you know, being healthy, just like we think of them being healthy. And our relationships with those larger union leaders is very strong. So, you know, I think there is the potential for some pressure, but I honestly don't think at this point it'll be a material impact for us.
Okay, and that's very helpful. Thank you. And labor availability, is that something that's you know, something you're having to watch a little more closely right now as well?
Yeah, there's pressure, no question. I think you know, and some of it's an adjustment. You know, some of it's the, you know, certainly some labor has left the workforce to focus in other areas that, you know, quite honestly wouldn't be as lucrative, but some of that will return as things strengthen. Some of it is, you know, when we were, you know, if you go back 6-7 years when, you know, when things were really strong in oil and gas and energy, you'd be moving 100,000 people, you know, a week, you know, out of Atlantic Canada. Currently, that's not currently happening because the demand hasn't reached that point yet. And, you know, obviously there's obviously costs involved with that type of thing. So we're not close to that at this point, but we are, you know, when you get these large turnarounds that go on these large sites, and some of them have been larger in scale recently than anticipated, which, you know, puts a bit of pressure there. And if they all hit at the same time, and then you've got some big mega projects that are hitting, you know, peaks, you know, there can be some tightness, but it takes a little bit of time for that to adjust. And then also you're broadening your reach a bit further. Most of the large work we've been doing to date with where we have large labor workforces have, you know, outside of Ontario, have been in, you know, Alberta and BC, and the labor to support that is coming from Alberta and BC, not from other parts of Canada at this point. So, you know, as things strengthen, I think there'll be a broader flow. We're also looking at, you know, we've got some pretty exciting programs for increasing content, you know, from Indigenous communities, increasing the content of our labor force, you know, with women entering the construction industry, because it's a great way to start your career, pay off some university debt, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, we're seeing certainly good traction in those areas as well, which we're quite excited about from a diversification or a diversity perspective.
Okay, thank you. And then maybe somewhat related to this line of questioning, on the subject of, I guess, escalating material costs and then also supply chain issues, which, you know, many companies are facing issues on that front. You know, it certainly didn't seem like there's any issues occurring in your business in the third quarter's results. I'm just wondering if you can comment on how you're protecting yourselves and managing through higher material costs, and then also whether or not you foresee any supply chain issues affecting any of your projects or opportunities, and maybe not necessarily materials that you use, but maybe you know, maybe certain whether it's electronics or things of that nature, you know, that are coming via imports, if there's any issues kind of on that front that's having any kind of impact on project activity.
First of all, we have a very high percentage of our backlog in a collaborative, you know, nature. So we're able to, you know, certainly work with clients, you know, in terms of, you know, appropriate strategies to manage through that. And in some cases, you'll have a scenario where you're concerned about a future escalation in material, and you're working with your client, and you decide to lock that in, and you might even lock it in and have it delivered and have it stored. You know, and that's what a collaborative contract allows you to do, is that kind of, you know, really strong common sense that you've got that capability. And if you're working for some of your, you know, some of the clients we have, they have storage facilities because they're larger governments and things like that. So we can do that type of thing, you know, in that regard. I think the experience we have in our teams as we've been evolving through the COVID pandemic, you know, where we've been quite careful in terms of, you know, the risk of, you know, of escalation on some of our, you know, on some of our projects, and we've been careful to ensure we've got adequate contingency, and address it, you know, in that regard. So I think in that regard, we're, you know, and we study this quite carefully as we look, you know, month to month, quarter to quarter. So we're comfortable with where we are at this point in time. You know, the piece we can't control in some scenarios might be, you know, delivery, not so much the cost, it's just the actual delivery itself. But that seems, to me, that seems like something that will smooth out in, you know, 3 to 6 months, and delivery systems and channels will improve that, you know, get through some of this, you know, some of these delays. We've had a few delays on a few things that we've been doing, but we find ways to work around that. Our modular business obviously is a business that requires considerable, you know, logistics and shipping. And so we have a pretty good, you know, sense on a day-to-day basis what's happening in some of the Asian ports and that type of thing with shipping channels. So, you know, obviously we're working through those types of bottlenecks, and there's things we can do to either address, you know, that as well. So I think, you know, as we close, you know, and talk about our current quarter and talk about our future quarters, you know, based on our lens at this point, we're feeling reasonable about, you know, what's ahead. And I think we've done a nice job in balancing risk, you know, as we should be doing.
Okay. Appreciate all the time. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Gabriel Moreau of IA Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
In September, you announced a $300 million contract for five Alberta high school under a PPP model. In the past, you've expressed some concern about pursuing PPP opportunity. Can you give us more detail about this one?
Yeah, so our concern about P3 models centers around concerns when the stakeholders that are critical to the success of a P3 are not aligned, you know, with all parties. And you know, certainly we've had experience where we've entered into a P3 and the agency that we've been working for just didn't have their alignment of the various parties that they were anticipated to control, nor did they fully understand that they were expected to control, you know, those areas. We're happy to work in a P3 model when the client and the various stakeholders that are involved have a track record of managing that, you know, that risk and their objectives and their deliverables appropriately. So we've had, you know, considerable success. I think this is our fourth P3 program, something like that. You know, in schools, you know, in Western Canada, and we've been very successful. We've had two large programs in Ontario for IO building OPP facilities, and those have gone, you know, very well for us. So we've had a great track record, but we're very selective. If it's a, you know, a messy brownfield type site where, you know, the client is trying to offload all the risk, we're going to stay on higher ground. So it's not that we're not against using P3s. We'll use P3s where they're appropriately used with an experienced delivery agency that has a track record of doing things, you know, consistently and with the right type of project. And in some of those projects, you know, you should be working in a more of a collaborative model because no one can control the unknowns and the risks and, you know, the framework of that because a lot of it's unknown, especially in a brownfield site. So, you know, we're seeing clients shift now, and partly because, you know, companies like us are not, we're willing to sign up for that risk transfer. And that's happening quite dramatically in the landscape from our lens. And hence the growth of appropriate, you know, more appropriate models. And it doesn't mean that, you know, in some of our models, you know, it could be a progressive P3 where you're working with the client to finalize the design, and then you're putting financing and other deliverables of maintenance and operations on top of that contract once you finalize the design and got comfortable with all of the unknowns. So, you know, we're seeing, you know, evidence of that type of, you know, delivery evolving as well, which we would be, you know, happy to work in. Like I said earlier, anytime a contractor can get a design to the point where it's essentially frozen and you understand all the risks and all the, you know, and you can properly estimate, you know, those costs, it's any contractors would aspire to be at that level. So it just makes it easier, you know, and it reduces all those risks. So, but, you know, we're not against P3s in any sense. We're just, they need to be used appropriately. And we've had experience, you know, over the last 5 years where they weren't. And we're a lot more selective today.
Our next question comes from Troy Sun of Laurentian Bank Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Troy.
Morning, Troy. Maybe just a quick question. I'm wondering if, Terry, you can make a quick comment on just looking at your revenue mix today, and especially on the part of the contract type exposure and how that compares to 2017. Would it be fair to say that you have achieved a better risk profile in, you know, the project portfolio that you're working on? And also, more importantly, on a going forward basis, should we be expecting sort of a similar composition?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's dramatically different, you know, from where we were in 17, as I referenced in the previous question, you know, around the mix of work we had back in 17. We had a mix of what I would call P3s that weren't appropriate for P3, you know, delivery. And today, you know, our backlog mix has, you know, changed dramatically. The magnitude, I was saying earlier, the magnitude of our backlog that's being delivered in a collaborative framework is very, very high, you know, in comparison to, you know, it's significantly different. It's a completely different framework than what we were in 17. So, you know, in that regard, you know, we like this evolution of where we're at. We like the mix of things. We like to build projects that have some complexity, you know, and in a higher level of complexity, whether you're building a you know, a weapons grade uranium laboratory, or whether you're building you know, a complex Bitcoin mining facility or a complex egg, you know, you like to use the appropriate contracting framework, you know, to do that. And clients have been open to that, because I think, you know, they want the track record and they want that resume that we're able to provide.
Great, that's very helpful. And maybe just switching gears onto that very recent wastewater partnership that you formed. Obviously, lots of opportunities there. I'm just wondering if you can provide a bit more color on how the company's expertise sort of led you to that award, and more so from the fact that, like, given your existing headcount, are you comfortable, you know, from a headcount perspective, to capture incremental market share in that vertical?
I assume you're referring to the Noventa.
Correct.
Opportunity.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So we have a team that has experience in that type of thing, and you know, I think the Noventa entity is a company that's been, or at least, you know, the leadership team there is used to delivering, you know, these types of projects in different formats. You know, we certainly have known them. Some of our team members have known them for a long time. So in that regard, you know, I think our approach to that, you know, and experience we have, you know, coming out of some cases, some complex, even in an oil and gas facility in northern Alberta, you know, you come out of some complex areas there with deep undergrounds and dealing with, you know, in some cases, water and things like that make it more complex. So, you know, in that regard, strong experience. We have the model. Obviously, we've got a resume of working in that type of model, and then expanding that into the broader Canadian landscape. Today, a very high percentage of the wastewater type projects that are evolving are evolving in IPD. Thinking about this out loud over the last, you know, in the last 18 months or so, every single water treatment project we've been awarded is in an IPD delivery. So that's a great model. And those are municipal governments. Typically, they're using those models, and they, you know, they like the ability for a company like Bird that works across Canada with different clients and different types of technology solutions to be able to provide that expertise in a, you know, in a collaborative platform. So that's working well for us.
So maybe just a quick follow-up on that, just to capture, say, the incremental share out of that $500 million, you know, telegraphed basket, do you believe that you have the proper, you know, tools and the headcount today to do it organically, or is there
some
work that needs to be done
there? No, we have the tools, and, you know, the $500 million that's referenced is a list of projects that are in various stages of evolution. So, and you wouldn't be doing 10 at once. So you'll be doing two or three incrementally at once. It's very suitable to use the teams, you know, and move from one phase of the project to the next. So, and you know, it's, and you know, obviously if that pace picks up, we're, we're very comfortable in that regard with the, and some of that experience has come from the acquisition of Stuart Olson as well, because we've inherited this very, very sophisticated group that can do quite, some really complex, hydroelectric and complex, types of project deliveries. So, for us, it's, getting underway as we speak, and it's an exciting tranche of opportunities.
Okay, great. Thanks, Terry. That's it for me.
Thanks, Terry.
There are no further questions at this time. I will now hand the call back over to Mr. McKibben for any closing remarks.
Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to join our third quarter earnings conference call. We've a very bright future ahead of us as a premier construction and infrastructure company and the potential to create long-term value for all stakeholders. We expect the momentum that we saw in Q3 to continue to build as we remain focused on our collaborative approach and as projects in the economy return to pre-pandemic levels. Furthermore, we have a favorable backdrop with a strong infrastructure stimulus spending and a favorable commodity price environment. As such, we're ideally situated to capitalize on the significant growth opportunities ahead of us. We have a stronger team, a more resilient business model than in the past, and consequently, we have and will continue to position Bird to play a major role in the Canadian construction industry. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.